This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave. Joy 94.9, this is the World Wide Wave. I'm Tom, joined in the studio tonight by Heath, Chris, and Damien. This week, the World Wide Wave stops over in New York City. No, we're not off to a Broadway production. It's an international show. We are speaking with the UN. That's correct, the United Nations. Chris, what's going on tonight?
So tonight we're going to be covering the developments in LGBT rights in the UN and why they are relevant to us. We'll be looking at traditional values and what organizations such as the UN do about the excuse of LGBT rights not being consistent with these values. We'll look at what to do when countries are regressing into worse situations of human rights, and also what it means to have local celebrities to speak out on an issue as opposed to international actors. And tonight we will also be hearing from Navi Pillay, the High Commissioner for Human Rights at the UN, and also Ban Ki-moon, who is of course the Secretary General.
This is Eve from Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
This is the World Wide Wave, and this week we are stopped over in the international city of New York, speaking with some folks from the UN. And of course, it's time for Fun Fast Facts. Fun Fast Facts of the UN or just in general?
No, Fun Fast Facts of the UN this week, because I mean, a UN is an entity of unto itself, I think. Thousands and thousands of staff members, a reach of millions of people.
They are like their own little country in New York, aren't they?
They are, and in Geneva as well, which is where I just was. And we'll be speaking to Anna Brown later today from the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, and she'll be telling us a bit about the work she did in Geneva. But to the history of the UN, it's quite an interesting one, a bit tenuous when it comes to LGBT rights, as always seems to be the case. So the UN was founded just after World War II, and we all know about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was, you know, it was the first document which really lay out what are the fundamental rights and freedoms of every human being. But LGBT issues were never mentioned, and not until 2008 did any country really dare to, you know, to speak in a national arena that sexual orientation might be a matter of concern, even though criminalization and horrible violence against LGBT people had been occurring for years and years.
Really? So there was no official conversation about GLBT rights until 2008 in the UN?
No official conversation. From what I gather, a number of organisations, so not states, but independent organisations, had spoken up in things like the Human Rights Council, but they were always very swiftly shut down. And what's more, some of the big organisations, like, you know, the Amnesties of this world, didn't have a dedicated section based on sexual orientation, even though the sheer numbers of human rights abuses were very high. And so I think it was around 2008 when organisations started saying, well, we've been reporting on these abuses for years. You know, countries have been aware of these abuses for years. So why are we not doing anything about it? So that's, I think, when the momentum started. But it wasn't all good news. In 2008, it was a Dutch-French initiative that raised the possibility of having a statement that was supportive of LGBT rights at the UN General Assembly. But it was horribly shut down with a big group from the Arab League saying that they opposed this on traditional values, of course. But in 2011, surprisingly, it was South Africa that initiated the resolution for the UN Human Rights Council, and it was successful. The resolution passed 23-19, and it was the first such resolution on LGBT rights. And I think since then, we've really seen the UN making remarkable headway when it comes to LGBT rights. And we'll see that even more when we talk to Charles Radcliffe, because he's, of course, working on this campaign, Born Free and Equal, which has just been launched in July of this year. And it's the UN's first kind of monumental step campaign into regularizing and normalizing human rights for LGBT people around the world.
Wow. So it sounds like they took a while to get started, but now that they've got the ball rolling, they're picking up speed
very
quickly.
Yeah, they only took 60 years. Come on.
Ah, okay. You know, details, details. Now, I'm an American, so I'm always going to talk about New York over anywhere else. But Geneva, you were in Geneva. You were in the offices. How big is the office there?
I was actually in Geneva working for a separate organization, a little organization called the International Commission of Jurists, which has a really landmark LGBT team. The stuff they do is quite remarkable. And actually, the lady I worked for was the one who drafted the Born Free and Equal report. But while I was there, I had the privilege of sitting in the Human Rights Council. And so I got to see all of these actors that came together to campaign for LGBT rights. And I was surprised and delighted to find that, you know, the colleagues that were around me weren't all from Western countries and they all didn't look and speak like me or come from my background. There were, you know, there were lesbian campaigners from Botswana, there were trans campaigners from Lesotho, and we've heard a few of them over the past few months on World Wide Wave, and I think they're just amazing. So it's not as bleak a situation as people like to think. So it's quite nice to do something a bit more positive tonight.
Hola, mi nombre es Felix de Colombia. You are on World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
You are with the World Wide Wave, and we're not in a country specifically. We are with the UN, the United Nations, in New York and also in Geneva, talking about what the human rights situation is in this international organization. The first person we're going to hear from is Navi Pillay, who is the UN's High Commissioner for Human Rights. And this is a clip of her talking about what it means to have LGBT rights in the United Nations.
All over the world, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people of all ages face harassment and discrimination at work, at home, at school, and in many other everyday situations. In many countries, national laws are skewed against them. In some 76 states, having a partner of the same sex is a criminal offense. People are being arrested, singled out for physical attack, being tortured, even killed, just for being in a loving relationship. When I raise these issues, some complain that I'm pushing for new rights or special rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. But there is nothing new or special about the right to life and security of person, the right to freedom from discrimination. These and other rights are universal, enshrined in international law, but denied to many of our fellow human beings simply because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. We cannot let these abuses stand. We know what needs to be done. States must repeal discriminatory laws and ban discriminatory practices. Punish violence and hatred, not love. And we should all challenge homophobic attitudes. The best antidote is education for children and adults alike. Reach out, talk, learn, and help make our world safer and better for everyone. This is an historic moment. More and more states recognize the need for action and are speaking up, including here at the United Nations. With your help and the support of millions of people who believe in universal human rights, we will secure equal rights for every last one of us.
Like us on Facebook at W3Joy or visit us at W3Joy.org.
That was Navi Pillay of the UN's High Commissioner for Human Rights talking about LGBT rights, and you're, of course, listening to the World Wide Wave. This is Ban Ki-moon, who is, of course, the Secretary General.
Some say that sexual orientation and gender identity is a sensitive subject. I understand. Like many of my generation, I did not grow up talking about these issues, but I learned to speak out because lives are at stake, and because it is our duty under the United Nations Charter and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights to protect the rights of everyone, everywhere. The High Commissioner's report documents disturbing abuses in all regions, with a pattern of violence and discrimination directed at people just because they are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. There is a widespread bias at jobs, schools, and hospitals. And appalling violent attacks, including sexual assault. People have been imprisoned, tortured, even killed. This is a monumental tragedy for those affected and a stain on our collective conscience. It is also a violation of international law. You, as members of the Human Rights Council, must respond to those who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. Let me say, you are not alone. Your struggle for an end to violence and discrimination is a shared struggle. Any attack on you is an attack on the universal values the United Nations and I have sworn to defend and uphold. Today, I stand with you, and I call upon all countries and people to stand with you too. A historic shift is underway. More states see the gravity of the problem. I firmly oppose conditionality on aid. We need constructive actions. The High Commissioner's report points the way. We must tackle the violence, decriminalize consensual same-sex relationships, ban discrimination, and educate the public. We also need regular reporting to verify that violations are genuinely being addressed. I count on this council and all people of conscience to make this happen. The time has come.
Connecting, representing, celebrating. Joy 94.9.
That was Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations, making his landmark speech at the UN Human Rights Council in 2012. And I have to say, the first time I ever saw that, Tom, the first thing I thought was, how nice it is to see an Asian man who looks a bit like my grandpa saying such progressive things about LGBT people.
Oh, that's a very nice thought. Did Grandpa have progressive thoughts as well?
I doubt it. I've never asked, but given that being gay is illegal in Malaysia, I'm guessing probably not. No, but it was quite an amazing speech for him to come forward and say in 2012, I think, because the things that he's calling for there are not soft steps. If you listened, Ban Ki-moon calls for conditionality on aid, so, you know, restricting aid flow to countries that don't adhere to human rights for LGBT people. I think that's quite strong.
That seems to be the flavor of the international world now, withholding funds if you don't behave well.
It does, but unusual for something that concerns LGBT people. I don't know.
It is, but it's a progressive world. We're moving in the right direction.
Thank goodness. Is this something which is relevant to you when you hear people from these international organizations making all of these nice progressive statements about LGBT rights and what it means to have human rights as an LGBT person? Does this mean something to you or to the people around you? Do you think it would be convincing if you knew someone who didn't support you in the way that you thought that you should be? Tom, what do you reckon? Do you think these speeches have any impact?
Well, I think it's the age-old question as to whether the UN is effective in the world or not. But I think it's great that a bunch of people from different countries get together and come up with some great ideas to strive for, whether they have impact, whether they have meaning. But they're good ideas to strive for, and these are some great ideas to strive for.
And I suppose there's lots of, you know, everyone can kind of take something a little bit different from these. We've just had a text in from one of our listeners, Daniel from Carlton North, who says, Ban Ki-moon's landmark speech is so inspiring, all grandpas can learn from him. Thank you for another inspiring show. And I think that's kind of the point of this campaign, that it reaches people at all levels. You know, it can be for someone like me, just seeing an Asian man with an accent talking progressively means something to me. And to someone else from another country, a diplomat, it might be that it's because it's the Secretary General making this statement. So, you know, there's something to be had for all people, maybe.
Connecting, representing, celebrating. Joy 94.9.
Here on the World Wide Wave, this week we are speaking with the UN, or about the UN. We're about to speak with someone from the UN.
Yes, Charles Radcliffe, who works for the UN Human Rights Office in New York, and he'll be talking about the Free and Equal campaign, the newest LGBT campaign at the UN.
Charles, Free and Equal is an initiative of the United Nations Human Rights Office. How did this come about?
It's been the latest step in a long process. I think the recognition that there is at last a kind of diplomatic dialogue happening at the UN when it comes to human rights violations against LGBT people. That is new, and it's still quite hard to make headway, but there is a conversation unfolding. But I think the realization is that, you know, we also need to kind of reach out to the general public. We need to start changing hearts and minds. We need to start a conversation happening out there at a country level, and that's what this campaign is designed to try and support.
Now, the United Nations has some pretty big issues to deal with, everything from, you know, wars to disputes. How do you ensure that LGBT issues are given some exposure at the UN level?
Well, you know, our position is that the protection of human rights is a core purpose of the United Nations. So the body exists to, you know, keep the peace, to support development and to protect human rights. And when we talk about protecting human rights, you've got to, for it to be meaningful, you've got to be talking about protecting everybody's human rights. You can't exclude people that you think, you know, because it's unpopular or because, you know, some people might think it's unimportant, leave them behind. No, it's all human rights for all human beings, and that's really where this focus comes in. We know there's a pattern of violence and discrimination directed at specifically at lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex people, and the UN needs to be concerned about it, and the member states of the UN need to do something about it.
There's more than 76 countries that still criminalise homosexuality, and in fact seven still with the death penalty. Are they at the top of your list to influence?
Yes, certainly decriminalising homosexuality is an important objective. Those 76 countries are clearly in breach of their legal obligations under international human rights law. Now, we have seen progress, I think, since In fact, there's an Australian connection here. As you may know, in the early 90s, an Australian activist, Nicholas Toonen, brought a case to the UN. And the UN back then decided that interpreting the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, that criminalizing homosexuality was contrary to international human rights law. And since then, more than 30 countries have decriminalized homosexuality, and there are a number of others who've recently pledged to do so. But it is it's obviously very important to try to get those antiquated laws off the books, because as long as the law tells people that gay people are essentially second class, second rate, in fact should be treated like criminals, then it's inviting general society to do the same. But there's a lot more than just decriminalizing homosexuality. If you really want to get to the roots of discrimination and violence and stigma, then it's going to take more than just removing those laws, but that's a good starting point.
Argentina's foreign minister came out when this project was launched and said that it's important not to confuse a pattern of discrimination with traditional values. That is, that some countries come out and say homosexuality is not a part of their culture. How do you counteract that?
Yeah, I think he put his finger, you know, right on the button. This is where the debate is at the UN. You have, you know, now more and more countries very concerned about violence and discrimination against LGBT people and wanting something to be done. But you've also got a core of very resistant countries, and their classic argument is always to say, you know, this is not in our culture, it's against our religion, it's, you know, it's not consistent with our traditional values. And that cannot be just used as a smokescreen to prevent any intrusion or any scrutiny. So the way around it is simply to say that, look, all human beings have human rights. You may have your own opinions. You may have your own religious beliefs. That's completely legitimate. But in the end, every state has a legal duty to make sure that every individual has certain rights. And that's what we're talking about here. So you have to kind of listen to that argument and get past it. But it is a classic objection, which we hear again and again.
Is it a message that is being heard in places like, I guess we've seen a bit of a resurgence or a backward step in some areas of gay rights recently in Africa, the Russian anti-gay propaganda laws. Is it a message that is being heard?
It's very difficult to generalise. We seem to be going forwards and backwards more quickly and at the same time than we have done in the past. You know, we see huge advances in many parts of the world. And we have seen the slip back regression in some African countries and in parts of Eastern Europe with these very regressive new laws. It is very difficult to get politicians there to listen. They're clearly pandering to popular prejudice. And that is one reason why we're also keen to try to kind of get a public information campaign up there, so that we're not only talking behind closed doors to diplomats and to politicians. It's very, very difficult, and there are a number of countries where it's going to take a very long time to change. But there are also a lot of countries in the middle where you can have a very constructive conversation, and I think things are moving in a positive direction.
You mentioned that the public education campaign, you've got a huge audience. How do you get your message around the world?
It is a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge for every UN public information campaign to try to reach a global audience that's so diverse, so culturally diverse, linguistically diverse, and, you know, a message that might test very well with a focus group in Brooklyn or Oakland or Fitzroy. It doesn't necessarily change people's minds in Kampala or in Moscow. But I think, you know, the UN has quite a lot of experience in this. It's run big campaigns against racism and on violence against women and other issues. And with this campaign, we're also harnessing the experts at Purpose, who are behind some very successful big social media, international social media campaigns. I think the answer is, you know, our core messages are quite simple. We're trying to really challenge some basic recurrent misconceptions and stereotypes and help people out there to understand that LGBT people in the end are just that, they're people. And they're people with beating hearts and hopes and fears and the same human rights as everybody else. So, I mean, that's such a basic core message, and there are lots of different ways you can try and get that across. And we've got 12 months to give it our best shot.
Weeknights on Joy 94.9. Sharing your passions.
You're on World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. But tonight we're not in a country. We are with the United Nations, a big organisation that has just launched Free and Equal, which is their LGBT rights campaign. And you were just listening there to Charles Radcliffe, who works at the UN's Human Rights Office in New York. So, Tom, it's an interesting campaign, you know, the UN engaging not just with big governments, but with, you know, with the little people, with communities, and through the medium of things like social media.
Well, I think everyone's embracing the social media. And I think it's really important and interesting that the UN is taking a grassroots effort.
We have an SMS in. Someone has said the nice words need to be backed up with actions. And I think that's completely right. And it's very it's very interesting, I think, when you're pitching at a community level, because obviously when you're pitching for LGBT rights at government, that's where you see things like legislative change and you see law enforcement coming on the side of activists and of, you know, of people whose rights are being abused. But then when the UN is launching a campaign like this, which is looking into, you know, as Charles said, changing the hearts and minds of the ordinary person, where do you see the actions, you know, and how is that measured? Charles comes back to us talking about the launch of the Born Free and Equal campaign.
It kicked off with a bit of a bang. You had a selection of foreign ministers from around the world, including US Secretary of State John Kerry. How important is it to have people of the profile of the Secretary of State speaking out in support of LGBT rights?
Look, it was very useful that we had not only, it was fantastic to have John Kerry there, but also ministers from countries around the world. It was a really cross-regional group. And giving it that kind of ministerial attention was, at least in the UN context, important, because at the UN, things like that matter a lot. But I think for the campaign, our bigger objective is to try to popularize the message, and that's going to require the involvement of other people that have perhaps a bigger popular following. So we have got some celebrity involvement as well, and they're doing a great job at trying to get the word out on Twitter and on Facebook and you know, in media interviews as well. So we're just kind of building that up. We have a few what we call equality champions who already signed up, and we'll have some more who'll be doing stuff for us in the coming months.
In fact, Ricky Martin is one of those who's on television here in Australia at the moment and has made some media appearances and comments in support of LGBT issues. How important is it that those celebrities provide, I guess, a localised voice? I also noticed you had celebrities from a variety of continents, so you're able to put out a message in a local language with a local voice?
Yeah, it's hugely important. You know, it's perhaps the biggest challenge. The most important thing we can do is to try to contextualize this and to try to get popular figures, people who are popular in their own communities and in their own regions to start a conversation about these issues. You know, we have a fantastic Bollywood actress who was a former Miss India. She's one of the most beautiful women in India, she's great fun. She's got a huge popular following. And, you know, she's ready to talk about these issues in India. Now, that makes an impact in a way that, we could never have if we just had an American or someone from Europe or another foreign celebrity come and talk about the issue. So we have to try to do it. Of course, you can't be everywhere. We can't build a campaign that we might want where we have celebrities from every country in the world and have events in every country in the world. But there are certainly, at least in each region, we're trying to bring in voices that have a popular following in that region.
Beyond the media coverage and Twitter, et cetera, that they're able to generate, how do you hope they will actually be able to trigger a change in some of these countries where homosexuality is still illegal?
You know, the old theory of change, that you begin change by beginning a conversation. And in many countries, these issues are completely taboo. There is no public discussion. There's no discussion within communities, within families. And so the first step is to try to get people talking about the issue and to present it, to perhaps reframe it and get people to think about LGBT people in a way that they haven't before. And that's part of the challenge. And we'll do it in part through our equality champions, our celebrities, but also by generating kind of compelling emotive content, short videos and macros and things that people can share on social media. And we hope that those things will serve as conversation starters. In the end, if this campaign can do anything positive, I hope at least it will begin a conversation or get people talking in places where previously this topic was completely off, it was off the agenda.
And sometimes it's those simple words that carry the most. We've posted the Archbishop Desmond Tutu quote on our Facebook page for people to listen, and he's very simple and succinct in his message. Of the countries that were there for this launch, Australia wasn't one of them. Is there something? Should we be reading anything into that?
No, nothing at all. Actually, the meeting of foreign ministers wasn't technically the launch of the campaign. It was something that we'd supported. But the launch actually happened in South Africa at the end of July with Desmond Tutu present. The meeting, the ministerial meeting, was a meeting of members of this core group, which is a group of 12 countries here at the UN who essentially meet regularly, and they're developing a strategy how to bring this issue to the fore at the UN. And, Australia isn't a member, but many other countries that would want to support this effort are also not members. Britain's not a member, Denmark's not a member, Sweden's not a member. And the reason is simply they want to keep it small and they want to keep it regionally balanced. So there are many Western countries who'd love to join, who'd be ready to join, but the intention is deliberately keep it small. It's just an inner core group, and very importantly, make sure we have members from different regions and not disproportionately Western.
And New Zealand is there carrying the flag and doing it rather admirably with their LGBT rights at the moment. How can our listeners get involved in and support this great program?
The easiest way to get involved, I would say, is to go to the website, go to the Facebook page, have a look at the material and share it. In the end, this campaign is about encouraging people to learn about the issues and to share the materials, the messages that we're putting out, share it with all their friends, with their family members, and encourage them to do the same. And it is, the tried and tested method of social media campaigning, that you begin to really see those ripples spreading out further and further as people share the content. We've got some great videos that are already up on the site. There's one called The Riddle, which is a kind of a 2-minute, if people just are going to spend 2 minutes thinking about this today, go and listen to The Riddle. It sets out our concerns in 2 minutes. And there'll be a lot more great videos coming in the next few months.
That's fantastic, Charles. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I don't think so. Just that it's really it's great that there is. I think the fact that you're doing this, and I know you do it regularly, keeping attention on these international issues. We're seeing this more and more, and I think the LGBT community really is tuning into what's happening globally. And there is such a big emerging civil rights struggle that I think we all want to be a part of, and I think there are exciting things happening. So I want to thank you for your coverage of that, and keep up the good work.
Hello, you're listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9, and tonight we are not in a country as we usually are, but talking about the United Nations and the developments that have been happening there in LGBT rights. And we have with us right now Anna Brown, who is the co-convener of the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. Could you tell us a bit about what's been happening at the Human Rights Council and why it's relevant for, you know, ordinary LGBT people in Melbourne?
Sure. Well, I guess people need to know that the Human Rights Council is one of the major organs of the United Nations system. So it's where countries involved in the UN system give a voice to human rights concerns about issues happening on the ground in places all around the world, where they're, for example, in places like various parts of Africa or Iran, where unfortunately LGBTI people are not just abused or discriminated against, but even killed simply for being who they are. And there's been some really exciting developments over the last couple of years in the UN system, and increasing momentum, I think, led by people like the Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, and Navi Pillai, the Human Rights Commissioner. And it's been fantastic to see how far things have come in just a short space of time.
Can you give us a bit of an overview about some of these developments and also what was going on in June, July this year when you were across in Geneva?
Sure. Well, people might not be aware, but unlike other, I guess, groups like women and Indigenous peoples and issues like racism, there's no international treaty specifically for LGBTI people, although there are protections under international law that protect us from discrimination. And one of the issues that the UN started to address is making sure that states or countries all around the world are aware of these obligations, and that the experiences of LGBTI people around the world experiencing discrimination and abuse have had a light shone on them. So there was an historic resolution that was led by South Africa a couple of years back, where the UN passed a motion for the first time recognising human rights violations against people on the basis of their sexual orientation and gender identity, and commissioning the UN to prepare a report about these violations and start to document the abuse that's going on. That report has since been tabled, and it sounds like it's all just documents and paper, but it's the discussions and the conversations and these statements by countries and other actors in the UN system that have increasingly given a voice to the violations that are taking place on the ground. So making these concerns visible and starting to make sure that on an international stage, LGBTI rights violations are being heard by the rest of the international community.
So since that resolution of 2 years ago, do you know what other developments have been in the works since then?
What we've seen is an increasing number of issues, LGBTI issues being raised at the council. For instance, when I was over in June and met you for the first time, there was lots of statements by NGOs. So I was there as an NGO delegate. And the great thing about the UN Human Rights Council is it's not just countries that get to have a say, but NGOs from around the world can get up and give a formal statement. And I was able to give a statement about Australia, and other countries were able to give statements that shone a light on the violations suffered by LGBT people in those countries. So, for instance, in Botswana, and an activist from Botswana were talking about the violations that are happening there. Another activist from Thailand made a statement about the right to health and how that violations of the right to health impact on LGBTI people. And in this way, I guess there's a voice given to those concerns, and there's increasing discussion between countries. We had a event as well that was bringing together countries that are friends of the LGBTI rights movement, and also hopefully educating people that could be persuaded to be friends of the movement about the sorts of violations, again, faced by LGBT people across the world. And as part of that, an organisation called ARC International showed a video which told the stories of people from countries around the world and followed a series of meetings that have been held that resulted from this historic resolution that sought to bring countries together in different regions and discuss what should happen next in terms of protecting LGBTI people.
So it sounds like some really dynamic and some really amazing work. I think for listeners who are in Melbourne and for myself as well, sometimes when you look to the global situation of LGBT rights, it can seem rather bleak, especially in regions such as Africa. And it's difficult to conceive of the fact that there are actually, there are groups, there are NGOs, there are individuals who are really championing LGBT rights. Could you tell me a little bit about the group of activists and NGO representatives you were over there with? Because I understand it was quite a diverse group of people.
Yeah, I felt incredibly lucky and privileged to be a part of what was going on there and met so many incredible human rights defenders from around the world, particularly from Africa. There's growing support for LGBTI organisations. The international sector is helping fund those organisations to really start to make a difference on the ground. And these are people that the most I cop being an advocate these days is maybe some flack on Facebook from my friends, but these are people that go out and do what they do, and they face the risk of, real impacts on their lives and potentially assault or death as a result of simply being someone that stands up for the rights of a minority in these countries. So they were incredible people, and I met people from Egypt, Botswana, as I said, Lesotho, and different parts of Africa. The South African lesbians are really strong because I think the leadership of South Africa of a lot of these issues has made a difference in civil society, really gathering momentum there on LGBTI issues, which was fantastic. From an Australian perspective, it was great to see the developments in Australia. So the passage of our discrimination laws that protect LGBTI people, and the I is significant because I think it was a world first that intersex people were protected from discrimination in Australia. So being able to talk to these activists and tell them about what's happening here, and they were really impressed and wanted to learn from our experiences and take back, drafts of our laws to their communities and to their governments and talk to them about learning from our experience, which was really fantastic to know that we could have an impact in that way.
No, that sounds great. A really shared experience for everyone involved. So can you give us a sum up of where you think the UN stands and, whether there's a bit of hope for the future?
Sure. Well, I think we're at an exciting, critical time. We've got, unfortunately, opposition from countries like Russia and others, and a growing... that opposition isn't really diminishing. That we're seeing even more rallying around notions such as traditional values as a fig leaf to mask bigotry and prejudice against LGBTI people. So there's that we have to grapple with. But in spite of that, I think it's a really exciting time with increasing leadership from the UN. And what the challenge will be is making sure that the movement towards progressing SOGI rights, which is shorthand for sexual orientation and gender identity, at the UN will be making sure that the global south, so to speak, and the developing world is at the forefront so that Western countries don't dominate the debate, and potentially what can happen and the risk we run if the Western countries lead this movement is that there's backlash against activists on the ground in those countries where the governments have shown that they will enact laws that hurt LGBTI people if we move too quickly.
So ensuring that any future progress is led by the Global South as well as Western nations. We've been talking to the co-convener of the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, Anna Brown. Anna, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Hello and goedenavond. This is Elko, listening in from the Netherlands on Worldwide Wave, the latest LGBT news and current affairs on joy.org.au.
Hello, you've been listening to the Worldwide Wave, where Heath, Tom, Damien and myself, Chris, have been taking you not to a country but to the United Nations. And I'd like to thank Charles Radcliffe from the UN's Human Rights Office for his interview. You can find out more about the Free and Equal campaign if you go to unfe.org. And also thank you very much to Anna Brown, who's the co-convener of the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, who was talking to us about her experiences at the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. And you can find more about the work she does if you Google Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll see you next week on the World Wide Wave. This is Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.